Hello, everybody. This is Dr. Diana Wiley. As you regular listeners know, Love, Lust, and Laughter talks about sex. And I've been doing so for 4 years on Progressive Radio Network now. Yes, sex. You know, it sometimes leads men to war. It leads women to kill. It leads politicians to lie. And, of course, it sells everything from jeans to golf clubs. And it has sex has spawned more fights than religion and more, perhaps, regrettable hookups than cheap tequila. But, of course, if it weren't for sex, none of us would be here. My guest is Dr. Dudley Danoff. He is a world-renowned urologist, very well qualified to talk about sex. Welcome to my program, Dr. Danoff.
My pleasure to be here, Dr. Deanna.
Thank you so much. I want to tell our listeners just more about you, and because you have your book is just amazing, and it's a book that I have already recommended to my patients, and will recommend it more and send them to the archived version of this show. So your latest book is Penis Power, The Ultimate Guide to Male Sexual Health. And you share the complexity and mystery of the male anatomy. You address fears, fiction, and fantasies of men and women alike. And you alleviate, and this is so important, shame, curiosity, and misinformation so many have, and replace them with knowledge, pride, and self-confidence. It is a wonderful book. And so why did you write this book? You wrote another one, oh, probably 10 years ago, right?
Yeah, probably a little bit more. It had actually the same title. I mean, it was before the Internet, before Howard Stern, before If Your Erection Lasts Longer Than 4 Hours, Call Everybody You Know. And I went, I sold the book to Warner, very generous, and when it came to the time to put the title, you know, the word penis on the cover of the book, they said, oh, no, a legitimate mainstream urologist, a Princeton graduate, Yale Medical School, you can't use the word penis, and they changed it to super potency. But now, we came a couple of years ago and we said, we're the 21st century, you know, it's out there, let's you know, update the book, bring all the new stuff in, and let's put the title Penis Power on the cover of the book. And still a lot of pushback from mainstream media. I mean, it's incredible in the 21st century. And, you know, most men and are ignorant about the penis and the male sexual apparatus in general, and I wanted to get it out there in simple terms, layman's terms, accurately written from a medical point of view and yet playful and insightful, and the need is out there, and that's why I wrote the book.
And I like it when you said to me off the air, let's get the penis out of the closet.
Well, exactly. And you know, and if I can't talk about it, a mainstream urologic surgeon who's been doing this for more than 30 years, you know, an Ivy League educated, Columbia-trained guy. I mean, who is the one that's going to be able to deliver that message? And every time I go on television, they say, here comes our favorite Beverly Hills urologist, Dr. Dudley Danoff, author of Penis Power. The whole audience snickers, and I have to say, you know, look, get over it. The penis is a word. It's not a pejorative word. The penis to the urologist is what the stomach is to the gastroenterologist, or the heart to the cardiologist. Get over it. It's a body part. Let's be adults about it. It's incredible.
It is incredible. And I also happen to see patients who have been to doctors, whether they're urologists or general practitioners or whatever, who don't even deal with their sexual problems, don't ask questions about their sexual problems, and yet our sexuality is so central to who we are.
Well, I mean, and I would go even one step further than that, Dr. Diana. I would say that men are penocentric. I don't know if I've invented that word, but they certainly, there's a little else on their mind, especially when, you know, they're aroused.
Yes, and I bet you did invent it. And for people listening, you really do need to visit Dr. Danoff's website, penispowerbook.com, and you'll get lots of information on that website. So I really love this book, and I read most all of it. I pride myself on doing my homework, but it's fascinating. And as I told you when we did our pre-interview yesterday, I really like it because you are psychologically and emotionally sophisticated, and you bring in, it's not just about plumbing, it's about attitude and the whole being around the penis. Because you say in your book, the penis is an extension of the ego.
Well, it sure is, and I would go one step further, that for most men with erectile dysfunction, it's 99% between their ears and 1% between their legs. Now, there are, of course, exceptions to that, but as a general rule, that is surprisingly true in many, many cases that I see.
So then we have the old performance anxiety sort of rearing his ugly head here.
Well, I would say that, you know, the biggest doubt, the biggest enemy of the penis is self-doubt. I mean, and this is a vicious cycle. You know, doubt leads to penis weakness, and then they have a bad experience, and this increases a man's self-doubt. And the next time he has sex, his anxiety level is even higher, making the chances of the problem repeating itself again and again. It's a little bit like your pet dog chasing his own tail in ever-decreasing circles until he disappears up his you-know-what.
Yeah, so it's really a negative feedback loop.
Sure, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Exactly. And you talk in your book about the self-doubt, how important sex education is. And I know that in the 30 years I've been doing sex therapy, a big part of it, especially for some of my people, both individuals and couples, is sex education.
Absolutely.
They just don't have the information.
Absolutely. And I talk a lot about how do we educate our sons. I mean, how do even single moms educate their sons? I mean, they need a male image. I remember going back when my son, you know, was maybe 3 or 4 years old, and we were taking a shower together, and, we were scrubbing up, and he looked at my penis, and he said, "Dad, when will my, you know, penis be as big as yours?" And I said, "Well, give me your hand." And I put his hand in mine. And of course, his hand was very much smaller than mine. And I said, "You know, when your hand is as big as my hand, you know, everything is going to be the same." And what we don't see is that kind of honesty. A lot of men shy away from it. A single mother, you know, needs a male figure to explain those things to her son. We don't want our kids getting it educated in the street or in the schoolyard or by watching some porno film which hardly represents reality. That's a fantasy. That's not reality, and that's not the way to get educated.
Well, exactly. I noticed that you dedicated your book, you said, to my father, a man of true penis power. Did he educate you about penis power in his own way, and what was his profession?
Well, actually, my father was a dentist, and my father was a very strong-willed man. I often say that he was often wrong, but never in doubt.
I love that.
And so when my father...
that expresses it very well, doesn't it?
When my father squatted and said, "You know, ah, you know what?" The answer was, "How much?" And I think, you know, what is penis power? It's the power of positive thinking as we apply it, as men apply it, you know, to the organ that we have so much fun with. It's as big as you think it is. It's as reliable as you think it is. It's as beautiful as you think it is. So penis power is nothing more than a power of positive thinking as applied to all of the things about you which are sexual. It's not about having a penis that's 2 feet long and erect like a jackhammer 24/7, 365. That's not what penis power is about. Penis power is about heart. It's about soul. It's about caring. It's about passion. It's about softness. It's about love.
All of that. And if we, I feel very fortunate to be in a relationship with a man who has all of that, plus the penis power. And that's why he has it, the heart and the soul and the caring. And you express it very, very well. Talk a little bit more about penis power. It's a big part of your book. Well, the penis weakness is what I actually wanted to ask you about, because this comes from general unawareness, and there is so much really good information in your book.
Well, I mean, the obvious of penis power is penis weakness. So again,
yes,
if we talk about self-doubt, if we talk about you don't think your penis is adequate, if you have anxiety, if you bring anger into the bedroom, all of those things will contribute to penis weakness. I mean, there's nothing greater, no greater killer of a good erection than anger or anxiety. You have to compartmentalize. You can't bring anxiety home from the office or the fact that you were stuck in traffic for 2 hours on a freeway somewhere and then bring that home and expect, you know, to have penis power. It's going to lead to penis weakness.
You say in your book on page 23, my goal is to destroy penis weakness in all its forms, chronic or occasional, actual or imagined. My goal is to eliminate self-doubt and inhibition. Inhibition, yeah. To be able to let go and to enjoy oneself and to play.
Well, I think I said this to you yesterday. You know, the beauty about consensual sex between two responsible, and I use the word responsible, adults behind closed doors, the difference between that and professional wrestling is that in sex between two consenting adults, no holds, H-O-L-D-S, are barred.
Ah, right.
And in wrestling, of course, you can't. I guess you can't choke a guy. Or I guess you could break a chair over his head, but it's a fake chair.
Right, right, yes.
Anything goes. I mean, it's a lot of fun. But, you know, now, Dr. Diana, we have the Olympics. And I like to emphasize in my book and my writings and my teachings that, you know, sex is not an athletic event. It's not how high you jump or how fast you run or what records or, you know, how many times. That's not what good sex is about. It's not an Olympic sport. It's not measured in metrics or points. So it's very important to understand that, you know, you only judge yourself. You're only as good as you think you are.
It's very appropriate that you say that with the Olympics going on right as we speak. You also have in your chapter what women need to know. I put an asterisk by this. I love what you say here. So to a woman, if you want a more playful man, one who can laugh and have fun while making love instead of taking it so seriously, then you have a better chance of making some changes in your man. Many men get overly serious because they are nervous about performance. I think I hear from a lot of my patients that, in effect, the man says, we have a job to do here. And so that takes all the play out of it, because he does have this performance anxiety.
Absolutely. And if he looks upon it as a job, I think he's in real deep trouble. This is not rocket science, a woman can fake it. But a man, if he can't perform up to his expectations, it's all out there. So if he thinks this is a job, I mean, you could have down days on your job. You certainly don't want to have down days in the bedroom.
No, but if you do have down days in the bedroom, I think it's important to not be too hard on yourself for not being hard.
Absolutely. You have to laugh.
Yeah.
Absolutely. That's
right.
And that's where that power of positive thinking comes in. Yeah, the most powerful of penis power men are going to have that failure once in a while, and you just laugh it off. Now, if it persists, you need to go to your doctor. You may have some serious underlying problem, diabetes, hypertension, hypercholesterolemia. You might have low serum testosterone. So there may be a medical cause if it persists, but certainly if you have an occasional, dipsy doodle, all is forgiven, and you and your partner should be able to laugh about it.
I sometimes get a new couple where the man is experiencing ED, and I'll always ask, have you been to a urologist to have this checked out? And he'll say no, and I say, you must do that.
Yeah, I think it's incumbent, especially in the older age group, that if my patient is having problems with getting a good erection, he needs to have a medical evaluation first, make sure that he doesn't have all those factors that I just mentioned, because many of those are correctable. And sometimes erectile dysfunction is the first red flag that something else more serious may be going on: hypertension, metabolic disorder, early diabetes, hypogonadism, all of those which are correctable and treatable and could be potentially dangerous. So unlike prostate cancer, which is a silent disease, we have no symptoms for that in the early incurable stage. With erectile dysfunction, it may be the red flag leading to other disease entities, the diagnosis thereof.
When Viagra was approved in 1998, April, as I recall, of 1998, one of the best things that came out of that was that it was by prescription and it got a lot of men in to see their urologist. Can you remember that time?
Oh, I sure do. Viagra is a great success story, and those drugs now, the PDE5 inhibitors, Viagra, Cialis, Levitra, and a bunch of others, are a miracle drug in the older population. I'm a little disturbed about its abuse in the younger population, the so-called guys that want to be weekend warriors. But it's a godsend, and it basically works to just increase blood flow. So it is not a drug of desire. It's a drug of performance, all those drugs. So if you take it and stare at the ceiling for the next hour, nothing is going to happen.
Exactly.
You have to take the drugs and be stimulated. And, there's an interesting story connected to how Viagra came to the market, Dr. Diana. Viagra was originally introduced as a cardiac drug to take the place of nitroglycerin. Nitroglycerin was, of course, very inexpensive, and drug companies are always looking for more expensive substitutes. So they were looking for a coronary vasodilator like nitroglycerin. And so they gave it to the men, the control group and the placebo group. And then after a few months, they realized it wasn't really a very good coronary artery dilator. So they said, well, we're calling off the study. Now, everybody, bring your drugs back. And the group that had the Viagra said, whoa, wait a minute. We're not bringing this stuff back. This stuff is like magic.
Uh-huh, yes.
So it was totally serendipitous. Pfizer never ever expected that to be the case, and the rest, as is history. It's on every jersey and every auto race football player helmet.
That's right.
Hockey skate.
I seem to recall that the rest of that story, a urologist was presenting at a conference, and he dropped his trousers to produce showed an erection. Or that, am I mixing up the stories?
It's almost the story, but not quite the story. That was a urologist who discovered a substance called prostaglandin E1. Prostaglandin E1 is also a very potent local vasodilator. It means opens the blood vessels and allows more blood to run in. And it's one of the therapies we used. And what he did at a national convention of urologists in the auditorium, he got on the stage and he unzipped his pants and he injected his penis with the prostaglandin E1 and produced essentially an instant erection to the astonishment of even the most sophisticated and hardened urologist in the office. But that is a true story. But it wasn't Viagra. It was prostaglandin
E1. Yes, I did get it confused. Tell me about some of your patients that sort of say, oh, I don't want to put even a fine gauge needle in my penis. I guess Cabergette is one that's all together already, and then you as a urologist can mix up a cocktail for injections. For guys that are not candidates to take Viagra or Cialis or Levitra.
Right. Well, I mean, that's the second line of treatment. And do use a very tiny little needle, what we call it, a tuberculin syringe. And we don't inject the head of the penis. I mean, most men think, oh, my God. It's really done at the base of the penis, just near the pubic bone. It's extremely simple to use once you get used to it. We have to dose you properly. It's very easy to overdose on that. But it is an extremely effective drug regimen. And there is one drug regimen between the oral, which obviously, if you can take it and it works, is the simplest and the safest, and the injections, and that's something called the MUSE, M-U-S-E system.
Yes, many years ago, when I lived in Palo Alto, California, I was a consultant for MUSE just to talk about how couples might react to this. And so I'm familiar with the MUSE, and I noticed that you wrote about it in your book.
I do touch on it. And what that is a little suppository that you place within the urethra in the opening. And it has prostaglandin E1, that injectable we just spoke about, and it's absorbed through the mucosa of the urethra. Also very effective in increasing blood flow. So there's lots of things out there. And, you know, if all else fails and a man is motivated, we have the penile prosthesis, the so-called pump device, very similar and analogous to an implant in a woman's breast. And we've been doing those for more than a quarter of a century. And, you know, men are very, very satisfied. It's not as obviously as good as the real thing if you're a 20-year-old, but it certainly is something which a candidate should think about.
I have a couple that I've been seeing, and both in their 60s, married a long time. He has diabetes, and there is a local urologist who is very good at putting these implants in. And so my patient and his wife are very, very happy with this penile implant.
Yeah, it's a terrific device, and it's highly recommended in the group that I call the motivated. I mean, obviously, if you're not motivated, why would you put one in? I mean, I had a guy put one in, and I saw him. I was sort of lost to follow up, and it came in about a year, and I said, "Well, how's it working?" And he said, "Well, gee, doc, I never used it." I'm saying to myself, so you put yourself through, you know, a surgery and, you know, and the unpleasantness of that and the fees. And so I think before anyone thinks about putting a prosthesis in, they ought to be very, very motivated.
I'll tell you a quick story, a case that I had, maybe 20 years ago when I was in Palo Alto. And same kind of situation in the 60s, in their 60s, and the guy had diabetes. And he really wanted to do the penile implant. And his wife said, no, I'd rather spend the money redecorating the kitchen. And I explored it a little more with them, and it turned out that she was afraid that he would stop performing oral sex on her, which he'd perfected since he couldn't have intercourse.
Right.
And he reassured her, no, I promise you, because he said, I'm enjoying it too. I've learned to really enjoy cunnilingus.
Right.
And so once we cleared that up, she said, okay, go get the penile implant. And,
well, and was he a man of his word?
Yes, and it worked out fine.
Great, great. And that's a great story. I hadn't heard that twist on the story, but I like it very much.
Yes, and I heard similar stories. In Singapore, there was the World Congress on Impotence. That's what they called it then. This is about 1993 or 4. And there were just so many urologists from all around the world. And I was the only sex therapist there from the United States. There was one other sex therapist from Italy. And I remember at the time thinking, Because this is, oh, Cabergette had been approved in Europe, but not yet in the United States.
Right.
And so I remember thinking, these urologists are pretty much just talking like they're not considering the relationship, which, of course, you do plenty in your book. But it's like, oh, let's put the lead in the pencil, and everything will be fine. And so I sort of reared up and said, no, we have to look at the whole person here.
Well, you know, the way a urologist's medical training is, most urologists are surgeons by nature.
And yes.
Surgeons think about surgery. You know, you bang it, you hook it, you sew it, you cut it.
Yes.
You cast it, you burn it, you cauterize it.
Oh, yes.
And they don't think about the whole person. But as we all know, and I mean, even the most seasoned urologist knows in his heart of hearts, I mean, so much about sexuality is from the heart, and very little to do with the mechanics or the hormone flow or even the blood flow. There's so much more to it. And we're not taught that in medical school as urologists. I mean, we're not PhDs in psychotherapy, we're not PhDs or masters in sexual function and sexuality. You know, we're doctors. We're, you know, if it's broke, we fix it. And all of the subtleties escape us. And what I've tried to do as hard as I can is I've tried to bring all of my medical scientific knowledge to bear and explain it in an easy, fun, easy to understand way, and then combine that with all of the psychological factors that go into making a sexual relationship deep and rich and meaningful. I think that is the strength of what I'm trying to say.
And you say it very well. We are going to a break, and when we come back from the break, you have a chapter in your book, Penis Power, The Ultimate Guide to Male Sexual Health, and the website is penispowerbook.com. So when we come back, I'd like to talk about your frequently asked questions in your book, including a question about addiction to sex, and another question about mismatched desire, and another question about prostate and the problems there. So we, of course, have so much to talk about. And I did speak, Dr. Danoff, with your publicist who contacted me originally, Javier, and he said, yes, if somebody has a question and wants to call in, I'm opening this up after the break, then the first caller will get a copy of your book, Penis Power.
Javier will
send it to them. So whoever might call in needs to stay on the line and give our producer his or her, because we have women who are very interested in this because they have a partner who has a penis attached.
I got that, you know, that chapter. Specifically for women, I want every woman to be a penis professor. I want them to know all about the penis in their life, how, why, where, and when it works.
Absolutely. And a penis professor, I like that, because the more knowledge we have, the better we can understand, the more patience we can have, the better we can stimulate, all of those things. So if any of you out there listening want to call in after the break, the number is 888-874-4888, and you'll have an opportunity to ask a world-renowned, fabulous urologist, Dr. Danoff, a question. So stay with us, and we'll be right back.
Cosa leggerai? Con che libro affascini il tuo cuore? E se ti perderai nel labirinto di un amaro autore?
We are back. Dr. Diana Wiley here with Dr. Dudley Danoff. And we were going to talk about his frequently asked questions chapter. And sexual addiction is kind of a term that, at least among sex therapists, is usually we think that, like any addiction, sexual dependency is a compulsive behavior. And it's a compulsive behavior that completely dominates one's life. So sexual addicts make sex a higher priority than family, friends, or work. And you say that and more in your book, answering the question, is it possible to become addicted to sex?
Well, I mean, from a medical point of view, the answer is no, because our criteria for addiction, it's based on the presence of a psychological symptom of withdrawal. So without withdrawal, when an addict is deprived of that to which he is attracted, he will suffer predictable biochemical consequences, like with alcohol or nicotine or narcotics. But being deprived of sex does not feel good, and different men will suffer to a lesser or greater extent. But at the end of the day, it doesn't constitute addiction any more than suffering over a lack of food makes you a food addict or feeling restless because you work makes you an exercise junkie. You know, men can become compulsive or obsessed with sex. And in extreme cases, of course, this can impact negatively on other aspects of their life. But, you know, the true meaning of addiction, the answer is, from a medical point of view, no.
You also have a question. I want sex a lot more than my partner does. What can I do about that? And you say about a third of the couples seeking marital or relationship help do so because of a marked discrepancy in the desire level. You know, you say a third. In my practice, it's about a half. One half of those presenting have mismatched desire, and it's usually the woman with the lower desire, but not always. Sometimes it's the man.
Well, I think it is a common problem, and whether it's a third or 50%.
Right, right.
I always kind of remember the old joke, you know, what do you call foreplay in a marriage or in many marriages? It's called begging.
Begging. Mm-hmm.
So there's a mismatch.
Yes, I know it. And sometimes then the other joke about sometimes it's helpful to make reservations or to give jewelry to get them.
That always helps. You know, I talk about giving jewelry. You know, one of my favorite parts is, you know, many men are obsessed with penis size. You know, is mine, you know, the biggest on the block, and I have never, I've seen more penises, Dr. Diana, than can fill the Rose Bowl.
Yes, I'm sure you have. So tell us about that.
And I've of course seen and counseled, you know, many women attached to those penises. I've never once in all the years I'm in practice ever had any woman come and say to me, Dr. Danoff, can you make my man's penis longer, fatter, wider? What I have had them ask me is, can you make it a little firmer and attach it to a sweeter guy?
Yes.
Preferably with a Platinum American Express card.
Yes.
So there you go. You know, now I'm not saying that there are not some, you know, people that think size really matters. I mean, most men fall in the middle of that bell-shaped curve. You know, you've got some weenie deenies at the far end and some gigantos at the other end, but those are overwhelming the exception to the rule. And it's really not about how big it is. It's how big your heart is. It's how big your soul is. It has how big your sense of caring. I think those are the things that really count.
So the average, my goodness, I do hear this question. So Dr. Diana or Dr. Wiley, what's the average size? And what I answer is based on studies, the erect penis, the average is 5.5 to 6 inches. Is that pretty much accurate?
Yeah, probably the erect is probably a touch more than that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's in that range. Or as many of my patients like to describe it, a half a foot.
Not it sounds bigger, doesn't it, that way?
How big's your penis? Well, it's a half a foot.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. But again, I think that at the end of the day, again, there are certainly exceptions to all of the things that I discuss. But at the end of the day, the size of your heart matters more than the size of your organ.
Absolutely. And, of course, let's talk a little bit about this, a little more about mismatched desire. And you say in your book, the best approach is honest communication. You must break the silence barrier. And so many of my couples come because they really have trouble with sex talk, with communication, and their lives would be much happier if they were able to do this. So sometimes part of my work is to model honest sex talk.
Yeah. I mean, it's absolutely essential that the couples, you know, talk openly and candidly about their needs and certainly about any discrepancies they might have in their desire level. I mean, and education is a part of it. You've got to educate your partner, whether it's the man trying to educate the woman or the woman educating the man. That's absolutely vital. You have to be a good bargainer. You know, put all your cards on the table and let your partner know and share and feel what you're feeling. And you can't keep it inside. You just got to get it out. You've got to talk about it. You've got to be open and honest.
There is an advantage to being a more mature woman or a more mature man. There's that crossover effect that Gail Sheehy talks about, where somewhere after 50, men can become more romantic. They slow down. They're much better at foreplay. And women become more assertive. They can say what they want. They know what they want. And they're not ashamed that they have desire and that they know their body. And they can speak up better about it. Not for everyone, but for many women. They have more confidence, more sexual confidence as an older woman.
Well, you know, again, the focus of my treatment are not women, but I sort of speak to what happens in men, the aging process. You know, the testosterone level goes down a bit, so we're not like raging maniacs when we're 50 like we were when we were 20 with an erection, you know, 24/7, 365. So that slows down. The whole problem of premature or rapid ejaculation slows down because as a man ages, the ejaculatory mechanism slows way down, so he's not in such a rush that he's going to miss out on something. So there are a lot of physiologic changes that take, you know, that take place that do allow for more tenderness, more time, more passion, and I see that in older patients more and more and more and more.
And they'll say that I read in your book you had some 70-year-olds who said, "Hey, doc, you know, sex is just as pleasurable, if not more pleasurable, now at 70 than it was at 20.
Yeah, you know, there's another expression which is widely quoted. It says, the 70-year-old man says, "It takes me all night to do what I used to do all night long."
Right.
But it's no less fun.
It's, you know, no less fun. And then some senior citizen couples have to spend a little time recovering after robust sex.
And then you have the other end of the spectrum. I heard a quote from a very famous old country and western singer who was known for his great sexuality, and that was Willie Nelson.
Oh, yes.
And he said, "I have but one regret," and I hope I'm not offending anybody. He said, "My dick died before I did."
My dick died before I did.
No, that was.
No, you can't. You can say anything. Oh, well, on. So that doesn't offend anybody.
Well, I want to.
And yes, but my dick died before I did.
Yeah, that's what he said. I have one regret.
Yeah, one regret.
I'm not sure that's accurate, but somebody told me that it was attributed to Willie Nelson.
Well, he's such an open guy and has such a spirited. Well, I'm sure the guy has figured out, just, you know, you have a sense of him, that he's figured out that he can perhaps do something about his dead dick.
Well, he certainly, I think, can afford it. He can certainly afford to see a good urologist.
And yes.
He could help. We could try to help him out.
And you've seen, of course, you are the president and founder of Cedars-Sinai Tower Urology Medical Group. And in your practice, you've seen a lot of celebrities who, is there more at stake, do you think? I know you'd have to generalize when you have a celebrity whose whole image is based on a man with penis power, and then if he doesn't have it, can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, well, I certainly have seen, you know, more than my share of celebrities, not because I'm a celebrity doctor, but because where my office is located.
Right.
Hollywood, Beverly Hills, we have an enormous number of people who are in the public eye and in the media who live here, so they become patients. And funny thing, or maybe not so funny, they are like regular people. Some of them are extremely nice. Some of them are not very nice. Some of them are very modest. Some of them are very braggadocio. I remind all my friends, you know, when they say, oh, I heard you saw so-and-so, and I said, well, I think that he or she puts their pants on in the morning one leg at a time and
right.
wipes their tush with one or two squares of toilet paper just like the rest of us. So there isn't much difference. Off screen, most of these, quote, celebrities are really, really sweet, nice, kind, and if you treat them with respect, I think they look at you in the same light.
Well, you have a quote from Larry King on the back of your book, and we're not saying he's your patient, but anyway, he gave a nice applause to your book, and he said, gives insightful, accurate, humorous, and knowledgeable answers to all the questions you were afraid to ask. I loved it, learned a lot, and highly recommend it. And that is a nice testimonial from Larry King.
Well, it is. You know, we are related. He's not my uncle or my cousin, so we have had some professional interaction. And
yes.
And I asked him if he would read my book, and he did, and he was very kind to write some nice things about it and talk about it in a nice way on the air. So it's always nice to have, you know, somebody who is high profile saying nice things about your book.
Well, because it gets the attention of other people who will say, well, if Larry King recommended it, because he has a lot of credibility after he must 50 years maybe on the air.
Oh, I think probably more than that. I mean,
yes,
he is the true master. But I think the thing that endeared him to the public so much is, you know, and I don't mean this as a urologic term, he never asked the really hard-edged questions. He always asked a soft-edged question. He was never very confrontational in his interview technique. People liked to be interviewed by him because he wasn't very, very mean. He wasn't self-serving. He was a pro at what he did.
Absolutely, and remain so.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
And you talk, well, I believe it's somewhere in your book, or maybe it was somewhere else, but that it's important not to retire, to stay engaged in life. And I believe that, too. I think that when many, especially men who are usually a little more identified with their work, they'll often get heart disease or cancer once they've retired at 65 or at 70.
Well, you know, I've seen now, you know, having been in practice nearly 40 years, I've seen many of my patients start as younger men and end up as older men and middle-aged guys who are now very old. And I think the most productive people are those that are active. I mean, it has nothing to do with how much money you have in the bank. I think if you're not doing something which is productive every day, I see these people age. And if you want to retire out to the golf course and the back porch, I see these people age. They age physically. They age mentally. And those that are still active are the youngest. You know, I cannot reiterate this point enough when I talk about young at heart and young in person. Attitude is the key to penis longevity. You know, if there's a will, there's a way. I really believe it's in your heart, and you've got to be motivated. And, of course, it helps if you have a receptive partner.
Absolutely. The studies that I did in the early 90s with Dr. Walter Bortz, a geriatrician and an internist on aging and sexuality, and one of the studies was with about 2,000 men raging. They were from 50 to early 90s. We gave them questionnaires. We followed up 6 months later. We gave lectures to these guys, not all at one time. And so one of the things that emerged was a very small percentage were having better sex than ever, but it's because they had partners who were interested and interesting.
Yeah, and it's very important. I mean, you may be old, but you just can't think, you know, that you're old. So, and you know, and everything has changed because until recently, our society's image of aging usually excluded sex. And now, you know, I have men that are 100 that say, 100-year-olds say, you know, doc, the one thing I really miss, not being able to have much sex anymore. Not because, you know, he wasn't physically able, or at least to be caring. He just couldn't find a partner at age 100 to put up with him.
That's fascinating to me, Dr. Danoff, that you have 100-year-old patients who are still interested. And it doesn't surprise me so much that, because I think most men retain sexual interest.
Oh, absolutely, because most men have a fair amount of circulating testosterone, you know, until the dying day. And as long as you have circulating testosterone, it's the testosterone that drives libido. That's what makes the engine run. That's what's the petrol. So if a man has a circulating testosterone level, which is normal or even, you know, low normal, I mean, he's going to have libido and sex drive and dream about it. Absolutely.
And dream about it. Yes. Yes. Absolutely. I like what you say in your book. I'm looking at page 268. And you've said this in other ways, too, on this program. Penis power comes from within. The only form of abundance that really counts is an attitude of abundance, an attitude of self-confidence and control toward oneself and one's sexuality. And skipping a little bit, penis power emanates from the heart and soul of a man. It is far more valuable than the costliest luxury. In a word, it is priceless.
Yes.
Hear, hear.
I wrote it. I believe in it.
Yes, you must have a very happy wife.
Well, I wish that I could speak for her. I've been married for 42 years to the same.
Oh, wow!
My first and original wife, and she's something special.
Oh, that's just lovely to hear. It really is. So, it makes me think that you are what you write about. The super potent man is happy, and you write about this toward the end of your book. If there were a motto for super potency, it would probably be enjoy life to the fullest, and the rest will follow. You've been living this, I think.
Yeah, you know, and I believe that a wise man would rather be a pauper and use his penis like a king than a king who's incapable of exercising and sharing his right to penis power. And I believe that, and I live that. So
live that, and you've seen examples of both ways.
Yes, and I'm not angry at anybody, and I don't hold a grudge. If my wife and I have a disagreement, you know, it's over in 1 minute. We have this expression, we called it next. You know, as in next case.
Oh, good.
Sparking and yelling, wah, 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 and then next, and it's over. Don't hold it. You don't hold it in your heart because it's a killer for any kind of sexuality. And I'm sure you see that a lot in your practice.
I do, and that's why in some cases I have to do psychotherapy before I can do sex therapy, because they are angry with each other.
Yeah, angry.
And,
angry.
You know, the great William Masters, Dr. William Masters, said what goes on in the living room, I'm paraphrasing, but will be expressed in the bedroom. So, and he also said the best sex education for a kid is to watch dad coming up behind mom who's cooking dinner and patting her butt.
Well, I heartily agree with that. And it's not the kind of getting advice in the back of the school, you know, yard or from a porno flick, as I said. That's not best sex education. You know, we like to educate our children by example. Now, sometimes they follow our example, and sometimes, obviously, as children will do, they will do exactly the opposite. So, but I'm a firm believer in setting, educating by example. I think it's a great way of doing it.
It's a wonderful way of doing it. And you've told the story about with your son. Do you have more than just one child, or
I have a daughter.
Uh-huh.
Who is a young, beautiful, successful attorney that for many years accused me of being a chauvinist pig.
Oh dear.
Well, when I was an undergraduate at Princeton, there were no girls, and when I wrote the first book, which I titled Penis Power, which became Superpotency, I was a little more penocentric. You know, penis is king, long live King Penis. And I softened it up in the second book and became much more ecumenical. And, and I think it's a tenor of the times. I think, you know, women are being forceful in all areas of society. You know, women are taking their place beside men in every profession there is. And the woman's movement is coming to the fore and penis is not king anymore. Not that it should have ever been, but I think all men in the 21st century, you know, have to soften their approach and be more civilized and less gorilla-like. And I think, if anything, my daughter taught me that.
Wonderful. So she's probably changed her tune about her dad.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. Look, I'm still her dad. Oh, obviously, sure. Oh, absolutely. But you know, we have certain. I mean, she used to get very disturbed. I'll give you a wonderful little vignette.
Okay, so, Eric, a quick one, because they like us to stop a couple minutes before the top of the hour. But I want to hear it.
So we call it in our house division of labor. I get up, I go to the operating room, I work all day. My wife, at the end of the day, always has a wonderful, wonderful meal. And at the end of the meal, I like to smoke a cigar. I hate to admit it to your listening audience, a doctor smoking a cigar, but I like a good short Cuban cigar. And my wife always gets me the cigar and clips the cigar, and then I light it up, and we have all these fans. And my daughter was always very disturbed. Mom just served you dinner, and, you know, and you're not helping her with the dishes, and then you ask her to get you a cigar. You should be ashamed of yourself. I mean, it's after she came home from law school.
And I...
Try to explain, you know, this was mom's pleasure, mom's honor. I mean, she's not getting up at 6 o'clock in the morning to go wrestle in the operating room and take out a 4-pound kidney tumor. And so we have this understanding, and it was very hard for her to understand, you know, how a couple has this sort of division, my role, your role. So I think it's a great story.
It's a great story, and you and your wife have worked out something that's a little more traditional, old-fashioned traditional. And but it works for you, and it sounds like your wife wants to please you, and then you'll want to please her more, too.
Absolutely. The more she's knocking herself out for me makes me want to knock myself out more for her. I mean, it's a great leap forward.
Well, let's end the interview on that. Wonderful. It's a personal note, but it's such a great example for anybody who's listening, for anybody in general, because you're a good man, Dr. Danoff, and I'm so pleased you were the guest today on on this program, and I hope we might have you back in the near future for another time because you have so much to offer.
Well, I appreciate that, and I enjoyed talking to you very, very much, and I hope we enlighten your listening audience.
I'm certain of it, and I'm going to send a lot of my patients to listen to the archived version, and maybe you'll want to do the same.
And good. We have it on ebook, and the publisher told me that because of February and Valentine's Day, I think it's half off on the ebook. So,
oh, good.
Go to Amazon or go to my website. There's a lot of information. There's a way to get the ebook. So,
yeah, and penispowerbook.com.
And any of your patients want to call me anytime they're in L.A., I'll try to make myself available.
Okay, terrific. I may call you just to say hello.
Anytime.
Good. Thanks again, Dr. Danoff.
Thank you, Dr. Deanna.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.